The House Workforce Development Committee will come to order. Good morning, members. Welcome back. Happy New Year.
Morning, Mr. Chair.
Looking forward to another year with all of you. Last week, we held a joint workforce and economic development hearing in Mankato and Vice Chair Brand's district and heard from several community leaders and from DEED about some of the legislation that we were able to pass, some of the challenges. And so I'm looking forward to crafting more policy this year to follow you to address the needs of our Minnesotans from all corners of the state. That being said, we do have joint minutes from last week, Wednesday, February 7th, and I see that there is a correction needed on the minutes for the under the Economic Development, Finance, and Policy Committee members present. Representative Liz Ryer has also joined that committee, and so I will note that the CLA will make that correction on the bill. So do I have any motions?
So move, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All those approved, say aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. That being said, this morning we are going to hear from. Okay, we still have another minute from to approve from March 31st. Our lead speaker, have you had a chance to look at those minutes?
I have not, Mr. Chair.
We don't have those minutes?
No, I'll push next.
Okay, we will.
Do that next week.
Joint minutes.
All right.
So I believe we have the new commissioner of the Department of Employment. Okay. This thing is AI. We have the new commissioner from the Department of Employment and Economic Development here. Yeah. I've had the fortune of speaking with the new commissioner over the interim, and so we want to welcome him and hear from him about how DEED is going and give us an update about some of the legislation that we were able to pass. So this is the space today to ask questions of our commissioner about a timeline of the funds that we were able to pass last year, and if you have any other issues, this is the day to do it. So welcome to the committee, commissioner. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Matt Verlek, and I serve as commissioner at the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and I'm accompanied by a couple of my colleagues. It's an honor to be with you all, and wanted to wish everyone happy Valentine's Day. So in our time this morning, we wanted to give you an update on work at the department since the end of the last session, and that corresponds with the time that I arrived as well. And as you can see, we are describing our activities under the banner of DEED Delivers for the various constituencies that we serve, all of Minnesotans really, but including businesses, workers, and communities. So we're going to focus our discussion on those activities and how we've been putting to work the programs and resources you all provided us in the very historic session last year. But one of the new things at DEED, of course, is the new commissioner. That's me. And so I wanted to introduce myself to you, partly because I'm very excited about having a strong working relationship with all of you, knowing that the subject matter of our department is something that I think we can find lots of common ground and areas for collaboration and work together. So in that vein, it was June 20th that the governor appointed me to this position, and I'm honored to be in it and have thoroughly enjoyed the first almost 8 months in the role. Before that, the job that I held was as president at an organization called the Initiative Foundation based in Little Falls in Morrison County. And I'm sure many of you know the six initiative foundations. They together serve a network. They create, they comprise a network that serves the 80 counties of greater Minnesota. In the case of the organization that I led, it was 14 counties of central Minnesota and two sovereign Native nations that we worked for. And those organizations, as you probably know, are involved in small business lending, small business training, technical assistance, grants to nonprofits, workforce development efforts, especially around child care, et cetera. And a lot of the work was done with state funds as DEED partners and other state agency partners. And so that's part of what made this, I felt like, a natural transition. Prior to joining the Initiative Foundation, I also served in the Obama administration at the U.S. Small Business Administration in a couple different roles. One was as regional administrator for Region 8, and then the last 2 years of that administration, I was at headquarters in D.C. as the chief operating officer. So in the early months of my time at the agency, have, of course, spent a lot of time in-house with my colleagues like Darielle and Mark, our deputy commissioner and our director of government relations, and learning, of course, the various functions of the agency in addition to what I knew coming into the job. But in addition, as you can see from the slide, have really put an emphasis on trying to get around the state. I've done a lot of travel. As much as remote meetings are valuable and they provide some efficiencies, there's no substitute for getting out and seeing a business in person or getting out and visiting a chamber of commerce and hearing from members, as I did to Wilmer recently with Representative Baker on his invitation. So you can see some of the visits we've made to companies like DigiKey and Thief River Falls, Polar Semiconductor, ST Paper, Microbiologics, Cirrus, Boom Chicka Pop, and then some of those other partner organizations like chambers, development corporations, workforce development boards, trade associations, and nonprofit grantees. So that's a lot of Minnesota travel. And then in addition, was very excited to be able to participate in the governor's two trade missions that corresponded to my arrival, including Japan and Australia. And those, of course, being part of the mission of the Minnesota Trade Office, promoting Minnesota exports to the world, as well as promoting foreign direct investment into Minnesota. So really a big emphasis on the economy, and was excited to see those in action. And then when you're leading something and you are new in that role, lots of people ask you, well, what is your vision for the organization? What will be your special initiative? And so I got that question quite a bit, and generally I punted and said, I don't have a new special initiative because this agency has been given historic responsibilities on a scale that we haven't had before. And so I've said that our lead priority is simply to implement in an effective and an efficient way the things that you've asked us to do. And so we are trying to squeeze every value, every ounce of value out of the scarce and precious taxpayer dollars you provided us. And so that is the number one priority in these early months. And we'll go into the details on that in the slides that follow. Before we get into the detailed discussion of individual programs, I wanted to give a couple slides with some high-level context about the state of the economy that we are all operating in, as well as some demographic trends, especially when it comes to workforce. We need to pay attention to our population of Minnesotans. And there was, of course, some concern that the population figures that went through July of, I think, 2022 showed a small decline in the Minnesota population. And at a time when we have, of course, workforce challenges and lots of demand for workers, that is a concerning feature. And so was very excited to see, pleased to see, that the newest census figures that go through July of 2023 showed growth in the Minnesota population, over 20,000 people, I think maybe 27,000, a rate of, as you can see, 0.4% in 2023, which puts us in the middle of the pack among states. So that's a good sign, and that will help some of those workforce challenges. The second bullet there, you can see this is a great place to live and work. If you measure, for example, the rankings of overall mood, we come in at the fourth happiest state. And I've heard the governor talk about the fact that one of the states that sometimes beats us in this rank is Hawaii. So if you consider our weather disadvantage, I'd say fourth place is something to be proud of. You can see on poverty levels, we rank well with low poverty. And on education, we rank very high, which, of course, is also great for our talented workforce, with being fourth at high school diploma achievement and 13th for four-year degrees. When it comes to median household income, we also rank highly at $82,338 in 2022. But just so you don't think that I'm giving you only the positive stuff here, we do have a challenge when it comes to the size of the labor force, given that it has not yet recovered to pre-pandemic levels. We're at 0.7% below. And as the last bullet says, of course, everything we can do to address those workforce challenges will be to the benefit of the economy as a whole, because there is such demand on the part of employers of all kinds, private sector and otherwise, that can be a constraint on our growth. And so that's why we're excited to be working on these issues with you. And then if we dig more deeply into specific economic data, One thing I would note here is that, of course, much of what DEED does is about shaping the economy in a positive way, working with employers and others to try to influence things in a good direction. But we also have a function that reports on the state of the economy. And so on a monthly basis, of course, we get to release the new unemployment figures, the job growth figures, et cetera, which is always exciting. And just to recap some of what we have reported on recently, you can see we've added jobs. Not just for 1 month, but for 2 months or 3 months, but rather 6 months in a row, which is a great sign. And when we say that we added jobs, we're talking about positions filled by people. And so employers are having success in finding people to fill those positions, but we would like to do more. You can see the total number of jobs is now over 3 million, and that is the highest that it's ever been recorded in Minnesota. So that's also something to take pride in. And then our unemployment rate, of course, low at 2.9%, lower than the U.S. average at 3.7, which is, again, something to be proud of, but also presents challenges. And if anyone thought that we could address the challenge simply by boosting the labor force participation rate, not that we wouldn't try, but, of course, we are already very high on that as well, meaning that moving the number even higher will be challenging, given that we're at seventh highest among the states already. And so we know labor force is a very big issue, and I hear that as I travel the state, as I'm sure you do as well. So when it comes to implementing the historic slate of programs that were funded in the last session, as you can see, the total budget for the agency at $1.8 billion amounts to a historic investment, and that is fortunate given that we have this workforce challenge, and I know folks have made the case for a long period of time that we should invest in programs that we had hoped for, and now we have some of those resources and are putting them to work, as the Deputy Commissioner will outline in just a moment. And as I mentioned before, effective and efficient implementation of these programs is our lead priority. And that's where the tagline comes in that we speak about all the time. That is how DEED delivers. It is via these programs, which in some cases involve DEED staff delivering services, but in many cases involves grants to nonprofits that are grounded in their communities and skilled at helping to bring people into the workforce pipeline, et cetera. And with that, I would hand over the mic to my colleague, Deputy Commissioner Majors.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Welcome to the committee, Deputy Commissioner. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, good morning. Happy Valentine's Day. I didn't know that was part of the rhetoric today, but right on. My name is Mark Majors. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Development, and I'm really pleased to be here with you today. First, I want to commend the legislature for the work performed during the last legislative session and the commitments creating greater opportunities for all Minnesotans to either enter the labor force or to reskill to move into family sustainable wage jobs. These investments are critical, or really critical, especially when the state is facing federal shrinking dollars. Never, needless to say, these investments are significantly impacting the development of Minnesotans' labor force and economy. Thank you for your unwavering support. Okay, so this year, first I want to thank the hard work at the D team there, the program staff, the fiscal team, the administrative teams. They have actually helped move about 12 RFPs, workforce development RFPs, since 7-1, which has been significant. And you could see on the screen some of these high level, some of these grants that went forward. Obviously, Pathways to Prosperity is one of our signature programs in our adult portfolio that serves a significant number of folks. Last year served approximately about 4,000 individuals and moved them into employment. These were people with multiple barriers to employment, and they were about 75% of them were people of color, and 20% of them were folks for immigrants. Our Women Economic Security Act program, which is a significant program that helps put women into non-traditional employment, is one of our strongest programs, and that the placement rate hovers in around $21 an hour on an average basis. So we have significant, we're really excited about that program. And then the other investment, which I want to highlight that's on here, is also the Getting to Work. This is a program that actually helps individuals post-training to identify ways for transportation to getting to work. And as all of you probably know, that is one of the biggest barriers to employment for a lot of folks. So these grants are really significant in helping folks to get to and from their jobs, put food on the table, and to help their families progress. All right. Sorry, who's doing that?
I've got two computers on here.
Okay. So. Direct appropriations. So last year we had a significant number of direct appropriations. I'm pleased to tell you that probably 99% of all the workforce development grants, direct appropriations are into contract and have been executed. So we're super excited about that. As you can see, about 47 direct appropriations for adult and 20 direct appropriations for youth. And then this year, actually, Workforce Development assisted in actually moving forward some of the capital grants that were out there, and we've actually started entering grant contracts with about 30 organizations on their capital grants. Next one.
Deputy Commissioner, I have a question. I understand that there are several nonprofits who still have not received the funding. Can you share with me why is that, and can you also give me a timeline when you'll be rolling out the funds?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like, if I may, can you be very specific? Is that workforce development, or are you referring to workforce development? Okay. As I mentioned earlier, we've released 12 RFPs since the beginning of the year, which is a record number, if you think about in the last 6 months, or actually like 7 months to get those grants out. We rolled them out on a staggered basis for the reason, because a lot of the complaints that we received from our partners has been, shove all the money out one time and we don't have enough time to actually apply for those grants. And so what we've done actually almost two sessions ago is started staggering the release of those RFPs to give the potential grantees the opportunity to apply for those grants. So if you're hearing that, if that may be true, people feel like that we're not moving the money, but I can tell you we are moving out at a record pace. And at this point, as I mentioned earlier, going back, at least six of those grants actually have already been released and have been awarded at this point in time. And we generally will release our kind of what I mentioned earlier, our signature grants like the Pathways to Prosperity, Women Economic Security Act, Adult and Youth Supportive Services, all out first, because those are usually the grants where individuals who are rolling over from the previous year are relying on notification because they're dealing with staffing issues. And we tend to leave the targeted, like the newer initiatives like targeting populations and Drive for Five to later, because those are newer initiatives. So I'll talk about that. But
do you have a timeline when it will be released?
I'm sorry, we will be going through those.
Okay.
And
do the slides.
Okay. Where do we land? Okay. So Drive for Five, I'm super excited about the Drive for Five initiative. This is a new initiative, as I mentioned just now. It's focusing on five high growth industries here in Minnesota that's based upon labor market information. It's technology, education, construction, tech, and healthcare. When we identified these five industries, we were looking at these industries where we had high vacancies in the state, but also where they had an average median wage at about $50,000 or higher. And that's what we kind of identified as that point where you have, we call a family sustainable wage. It could be higher, but that's just where we landed with that. So those grants actually are in. We're in the process of making final decisions and anticipate making award notices in the next 2 weeks. So thank you to the legislature for doing that. Okay. Thanks, Dario. Okay. All right. So targeted populations. So this is a new initiative. This was really a great opportunity, as the commissioner talked about, of trying to get more folks into our labor force. We know that there are populations out there that have not been in our labor force that we need to bring in. There's also individuals, as we talked about, that need to reskill. And we wanted to make some emphasis on bringing those populations into the workforce or upskilling them. And so this investment has helped with looking at trying to get those individuals in low-income communities, in communities where there's low educational attainment, maybe that their average median wage is lower than you may see with other ethnic groups in Minnesota. And so making those investments are really critical here. So those grants, actually, the RFP has gone out, the grant RFP is back in. We're starting to review those RFPs, and we anticipate making final decisions on those in March 2024. So super excited about that. Okay. I cannot even see what's on the screen versus what I have. Which one do I have? Okay. Clean economy, equitable workforce. So as I think a lot of you know, clean economy is always is a new industry for us here in Minnesota. And the advancement of this industry is really critical. I can't remember the numbers, but I think I saw approximately like 60,000 potential job openings in the coming years. So this investment of $3 million is really important, particularly to get individuals from communities of color into this field. This is a field that we're seeing a lot of opportunities opportunity for moving into family sustainable wage. You start thinking about energy efficiency opportunities, weatherization, anything connected with solar, and obviously construction. So this is a RFP that's actually out to, as well, and we anticipate that rolling, making decisions in March as well.
Deputy Commissioner, I have a question. So for some of these state funds that we have available, you mentioned for the BIPOC community to help uplift them. But my question is, how is DEED outreaching to these communities who often don't know about the resources or don't have access to the resources?
Thank you, Chair Zong. It's a couple of ways. One is that we did probably about 30 community outreach sessions in the last 2 years to talk about the opportunities. I've actually gone around the state last August. I think I covered almost about 1,400 miles throughout the state. Didn't know there were many churches and cornfields in Minnesota, but it was a way of me making sure that we're making that the word is out. In addition, if a real close look actually in our targeted populations RFP, we even put a piece in there where we're looking for some of our community-based organizations to help us with doing outreach into the communities. That was very particular for the very reason that you talk about, because we do know that a lot of the communities are maybe not be familiar with the opportunities that that we're offering here. So that was something that we wanted to do to ensure that we're doing a stronger outreach, making a stronger outreach effort.
Commissioner, are these RFPs available online, or how would the community know where to access these?
Sure. Yes, they are. They are online, and we also put out a note blogs. We're very, if you're, you know, DEED, we're good at putting out blogs, and we actually announce these RFPs out to all our partners. In addition to putting blogs out, we also have webinars. And so that individuals who may be interested in the actual grant, usually a week after we release the RFP, we talk about those, what the opportunity may entail. And then we also provide frequently asked questions on a weekly basis to any questions that come into our office to make sure we can answer those. In addition, we use through our other partners, and the commissioner goes out, as you heard, he goes around the state, he talks about these opportunities as well as other partners within DEED talk about these opportunities.
And so, like, for example, folks in greater Minnesota who may not have digital access, or folks from my community whose English is not their first language and don't know how to use the internet, how would they get access to these resources?
Chairman Zong, are you talking about the resources or are you talking about access to the RFP?
Sorry.
Okay. Well, again, as I mentioned earlier, I've traveled around the state to talk about these RFP opportunities, and that started in August, right after the legislature did its fine work of releasing these programs. I think, too, we've talked to our partners throughout the state. We have over 50 career one-stop centers around the state where we've spoken to our partners about those opportunities. We have 16 local workforce development area boards around the state, which they also know about these opportunities. And actually, we encourage them to work with local partners to actually come in for those RFPs. So the word is going out through our outside of us kind of traveling the state, but also speaking with our partners and asking them to highlight the opportunities. And then thirdly, through the blogs that we put out on almost a daily basis about the opportunities that may be available to folks.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add, in addition to what Deputy Commissioner mentioned, we look to partner with all of you, and when you help us to identify a group that we should be talking to, we certainly try to take you up on those invitations, and so that's a good opportunity for partnership, I think, as well.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go to the next one, Office of the American. So, I want to congratulate the legislature on making sure that this office moved across the finish line. It was a strong statement by this legislature to say that they wanted to be inclusive of all Minnesotans, and particularly our new Americans and our current immigrant population, that they're going to have an opportunity to learn about opportunities in workforce development and economic development in our state. So this office is off to doing some great work. As you can see, there's some employer education, language translation work. But I also want to raise the point this as well, is that this office is not just relying on actually legislature do their piece. We've also done some fundraising and actually looked at actually getting some additional dollars. So we've actually gotten some private funds, about $75,000, to do language access to hire a consultant to help with some work. In addition, we have also received another $65,000 to train in DOJ legal service reps. And what that really is to help individuals who are coming into Minnesota who may be the kind of like waiting to get their status to actually provide guidance on what the process is to go through to gain obtaining their status. So this office is working really aggressively to obtain additional dollars to assist with the work, but also working with our partners like at DHS and other state agencies as we try to help our new arrivals and our current immigrants be successful. And then our youth workforce development. Again, a bold decision last year to double down on our youth employment programs, our Minnesota youth programs, our youth at work, and our youth programming. This is one of our signature. These are our signature programs at DEED. We have always phenomenal numbers and outcomes there. A high emphasis on serving youth from low-income communities, homelessness, and other, and getting youth into strong programming like work readiness, work experiences, and also ultimately putting them into jobs. There's also an emphasis on making sure individuals complete their high school diplomas and these trainings. So again, a great program, and these programs are off and going. And now I'll turn it over to my colleague, Dario Dannon.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Zhang, members of the committee. My name is Darielle Dannon. I am the Government Relations Director at DEED, and I'm going to be walking you through the last of the slides here, right up until the commissioner, which is what we would consider our Workforce Services Division. So first and foremost, one of the items that was a policy item that was included in the job bill last legislative session was making unemployment insurance available to what's often called hourly workers, but really paraprofessionals, so non-teaching, non-administrative staff. They were previously not able to receive unemployment benefits when they were laid off during the summer term. But we made that policy change last legislative session. We got information back from a number of those folks who were able to receive those benefits while they were between jobs. So during that intern period, while they're laid off and while they're waiting for that summer employment to start, they were able to receive that partial wage replacement from unemployment insurance benefits. So just wanted to provide you with a little high-level information about the impact of that program, or that policy change, rather, on individuals' lives. So lots of good comments to us from those friends. Well, lots of assists here, colleagues. Thank you. So next slide. So one of the marquee programs that we passed collectively as a legislature last legislative session was, of course, enacting paid family and medical leave. And we as an agency are going to be shortening that term to just paid leave. So I think for regular Minnesotans, that'll be a little easier to understand. So I'm going to refer to it as paid leave from now on. So just going to walk you through real quick again what we passed. Do not forward me, please. Just whizzing through, it's easy. So just reminding you a little bit of what we passed at the legislature and then giving you some information about where we are at our agency in terms of implementation. So reminding you that we passed partial wage replacement for individuals to have bonding leave, caring leave, a safety leave, and that would be victims of domestic violence would be considered safety leave, active duty, or sometimes it's called extingency leave, which very proud to be able to pronounce that word these days, but leave when somebody is deployed for medical service or for military service, and then own medical leave. And so those are the main types of leave that one could receive partial wage replacement for. One individual kind of leave, you can receive up to 12 weeks of leave, but that would be under the direction of a medical professional. So for instance, if you were receiving leave for your own medical care, that medical professional would determine the amount of appropriate leave and that wage replacement, partial wage replacement for that leave appropriately for you. The total leave an individual could have across these various kinds of leave is 20 weeks in Minnesota over a 52 or 1 year period. So that's just a little reminder, this doesn't start until January 1st of 2026. So we as an agency are very heavily in what we would consider the implementation time. Hopefully some of you saw, I think we had a banner announcement that we hired a new director for the paid leave program. His name is Greg Norfleet, and he comes to us from Massachusetts. He was a real exciting get for us at the agency because he helped lead the implementation and the beginning of the paid leave program in Massachusetts. So he comes to us with that experience under his belt, and we're very, very appreciative to have him. So he's helping us to stand up the program. We've also hired on some of our other key leaders in that department, our new division, and have begun a bunch of outreach. So our team has reached out to and had conversations with at least 30 stakeholder groups, I think well more than that now. I know we've got conversations with actually some of you. I'm gonna call it Representative Baker here to talk more about get advice and get direction as we think about implementing a program. Really for the next year and really for the next 2 years, but most intensely this year on the paid leave program, really the work of the agency, and actually the commissioner said it best at the top, the work of the agency is appropriate implementation. So really ensuring that we develop a program that is one that is focused on the individuals who will receive those benefits and takes into account your input and direction. I will also note that we've got a couple other big things on the horizon on that I think we've started to share with folks. One of them being that we have identified that we will have a sort of streamlined approach for employers in the paid leave program where they will be able to share information with us. It's the wage information that they need to share on the unemployment insurance system every quarter. They will now be able to share that for both unemployment insurance and the paid leave program. So we're looking for efficiencies in the program as we are starting to stand it up.
Deputy, we have a question from Chair Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Chair. So two things I just wanted to note, especially as today is Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives Awareness Day. On the safety leave, folks may not realize if they're not well, have not had to experience themselves, but just the amount of time it can take to deal with those situations. It's not just the day that the violence happens or the abuse happens, but it's, you know, you might spend an entire day at court getting your order for protection, and then there's follow-up hearings and there's gathering information, and it's just, it's an incredibly time-consuming, and you know, we know people have lost jobs or have not sought help from the services that exist because they're afraid of losing their jobs. So I just want to highlight how important that is, especially today. And then just want to say the unemployment website is not fun to deal with as an employer. So the more we can do to make that easier for employers, especially those of us who don't have whole departments of other people to do it, the better. Like the Department of Revenue website is much easier to use as an employer than the unemployment website. So the more we can keep that in mind, and if things need to happen, that we're thinking ahead so that we're making this transition as easy as possible. Just wanted to note that if that hasn't sort of risen to this level, that really, it's a barrier because it's hard to navigate and it's a lot of information. I will say every time I've had to call, everyone that has answered the phone has been very helpful, but small businesses often do their work after 4:30 p.m. So I just wanted to sort of flag that so folks are keeping that in mind as we move forward towards these new programs being implemented. Thank you.
Right.
Chair, and may I just make a comment on that?
Go ahead, Director.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Becker-Finn. And I think, as I was noting, the efficiency that we'll be able to, that we've identified that we'll be able to implement across the two programs, we are looking for more of those. So our team, one of the things our team is really going to be paying special attention to on the paid leave side is particularly small businesses. And noting exactly what you said here, that small businesses are often doing this work themselves. So we, as we stand up a program, we need to look for efficiencies. I won't spend too much time commenting on the unemployment insurance system, but we are very well aware and are continuing to look to make improvements to that program. But you are absolutely right, Representative. As we're standing up this entirely new program, it's a fresh opportunity for us to look to ways to make the program easier to access, easier to utilize. And so that's really the work that the team is doing, particularly this year, because we're kind of at that right stage as we think about implementation. So excellent comments. So I am going to move on from paid leave at this time. But of course, we as an agency are always, I will just extend the offer that Representative Baker has already taken us up on. that we are happy to, the paid leave team and our team here are happy to come and talk with you about any of the aspects of the paid leave program. It is, again, in that implementation stage, so if you have advice, suggestions, or folks you want us to contact, or groups that we should be going out and talking to, please let us know. Happy to do that. So I'm going to move on to individuals with disabilities now. At DEED, we are very proud that our agency, after DHS, our agency served the most individuals with disabilities and relates them to employment of any state agency. So our work is primarily focused on individuals with disability, getting them jobs, helping them retain jobs. And so one of the things that we're looking at and always tracking is that employment statistic. And unfortunately, we know that employment for individuals with disabilities is very low. We have, as you can see by the graph here, we do, because of the tight labor market and some of the other factors, we have seen a rise in employment with individuals for individuals with disabilities. We're also really, really hoping and expecting that some of the programs that you helped implement this last session is also going to continue that rise of employment for individuals with disabilities. So we'll move on to the next slide. Oops, it goes down. Fantastic. So one of those programs is the Employer Reasonable Accommodation Fund. If you haven't heard about this, please help. I can share the direct link for you, but help us broadcast this widely. This is a program that we identified when talking with individuals with disabilities ahead of last legislative session and with you all, that often employers were hesitant to employ those individuals because they had some small accommodations that needed to be accessed at the kind of the front edge of employment. So ramps, some technology, things like that. And we really heard from individuals that for moderate and small employers, again, that was often a barrier. And so we've created this Employer Reasonable Accommodation Fund. It's a pilot. It's actually the first in the nation. So we've had in folks from other states asking us how this is going. And so we've gotten it up and running. It is kind of on the front edge of providing reasonable accommodation. So we certainly anticipate next year we'll be able to paint a more kind of complete picture of how this has hopefully been taken up and made that positive impact on folks getting those jobs. On to workforce digital transformation, sort of in the same vein, but we received some additional funding from this committee here to overhaul a number of our systems. And if any of you, you may or may not recall, but we have a very old system called MinnesotaWorks.net that I guess I always say it makes me think of, it's a very early 2000s, right? It sort of feels like you're going to have some MySpace music jazz up behind it. Unfortunately, that also means that it's really terrible to use. Not good for employers to post jobs, and not good for workers who are looking for jobs. And we are required to run this site as the state of Minnesota by the federal government. And so one of the big things that we are in the process of transforming is that site. We're going to make it much more usable for folks so that we can get those folks who are looking for jobs and employers who are looking to hire connected much better. We've also, of course, noted here, made are kind of on the way of making some other of our systems much more usable, much more, actually, as kind of highlighted by Representative Becker Finn, but I'm sure all of you, if you've ever tried to access some of our systems, many of them can be updated. And so we are in the process of using those dollars to do that, to hopefully make everything much more accessible and usable by the public. And talking about individuals with disabilities, one of the places where we have a unique program and we received some additional dollars was Individual Placement and Supports Program. This is a program for individuals with disabilities who have who have serious mental illness. And unfortunately, there's a very low, unfortunately, those individuals are very likely to not be employed. And so this is a program that provides intense supports and services to help those individuals find and then retain employment, helps them navigate through if they're running into issues with or without connected to their disability, but really help them maintain that connection to employment. So the additional resources provided by this committee here has allowed us to expand that program so it can serve every county of the state, which it didn't previously, and more individuals who need these services. And then my last couple of slides are just talking about a unique program that we have in Minnesota, and I guess I'm very, very proud of it at our agency, is State Services for the Blind. And this is something that when we came here to talk to you about last legislative session, we were talking about we were not maximizing pulling down federal funds. And then we also weren't able to, we've had an increase in folks who need these services in our state, and we weren't able to serve everyone. And so with your dollars that you put in the jobs bill, including some base funding, we can report back to you that we're able to maximize those federal resources. So we're pulling down an additional $1 million and also able to do more comprehensive services in State Services for the Blind. So you can see here just noted that we have been embarking on a journey to provide more recorded works in various languages. And so we're really pleased to be able to report that we've recorded works in Ojibwe, Dakota, Hmong, and Somali now. And those are all activities we wouldn't have been able to do without those additional resources. So again, thank you, and we'll kind of continue embarking on that journey. And then I'm going to leave you, and then I'll turn this back over to Commissioner Verlich, but I'm going to leave you with just a story of impact. Again, State Services for the Blind impact. And this individual pictured here is one of our clients, Ms. Breyer, I believe is how you pronounce her last name. And she is a master's student in social work at St. Scholastica, there we go, in Duluth. And one of the things she identified, so she is a visually impaired individual, and she identified while she's in her master's program that there is no way for her to access a read version of the DSM. If any of you work in the healthcare field, the DSM is a really critical manual. And so she contacted our State Services for the Blind team, and our team, along with volunteers, they spent 87 hours recording the DSM. So it's not just available for this individual, but available for anyone into the future that will help more visually impaired individuals get into and be excellent healthcare providers. So we're really excited about that, really appreciative that she allowed us to tell this story. This is a little article in the Duluth News also about both her journey and, of course, her ability to access more resources with State Services for the Blind. So again, thank you to the committee for all those additional resources and investments. And I'm going to turn this over to, or back to, Commissioner Verlich.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you again for the opportunity to give this overview. And to close this out, just a reminder that we are fortunate at the level of the country, but especially here in Minnesota, to be in a moment of economic strength. It wasn't all that long ago that there were lots of predictions about recession. There were some concerns about what would be the impact coming out of the last legislative session on the business environment in Minnesota. The business environment in Minnesota is very strong. We have strong demand for workers, and that's why all of the programs that you funded that we just described the status of are so very important. We have seen lots of great news, like the headlines you see here on this slide. And with your support and the programs that we have the honor of delivering, we will look to help support continued progress in those directions. And with that, we would welcome your questions.
Thank you, Commissioner, and members and members of the public. If you are, if some of the folks that you were working with last year are having issues with some of the funding, feel free to reach out to the Commissioner and to Director Dariel Dannon, who's been very helpful, but some folks who reached out to me. So I encourage those of you who are watching and members of the community to reach out to Director Dannon. That being said, we do have some member questions, and first one is from Lee Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. Again, welcome, Commissioner and team. It's good to see you back at it. I took a lot of notes while I was listening to some of the questions you had, Mr. Chair, too. And again, my recent conversations with our Legislative Budget Office, you know, kind of helped me understand, too, the enormity of what DEED has to put out for all the direct appropriations from last year. This body allocated over $500 million to DEED for direct appropriations to help people get to work and stay in work. And all these programs, to Mr. Chair's point about some of the Asian community, I know that when I looked at the spreadsheet that I just received here a few weeks ago, so this is pretty current, you know, the Asian Economic Development Association was allocated $500,000. So far, zero has been sent out. The Office of New Americans, $750,000 were allocated. $1,400 have been spent to date. Emerging Entrepreneur Program, $1 million was set aside. So far, zero has been spent. I guess it proves something to us that, well, literally, when you look at the whole thing, less than half has been appropriated and less than half has been executed. So it's a painful process to get it out. There's a lot of I's to look at and T's to cross, Commissioner, and I don't expect it to be easy, but that's the problem that we do when we do it in such a large scale. It takes a long time, but we have to do it better because it's been 8-9 months since this is this body passed all this spending, and it's not getting to the communities that we needed to get it to. I think somebody brought up the UI education thing. It is exciting for people to get unemployment insurance in the education system now, but it has cost our school districts enormous amount of dollars. So maybe, to Commissioner, do you guys have a number on what has been spent this year now for unemployment insurance compensation for the new group of employment that has been recognized through the school systems? Do we have a number on that that actually really just goes right back to our school districts because they're the ones paying for it? Do we have a number on that?
Commissioner?
I can't say that I have that number in front of me, but we could certainly get that for you.
Okay. I just know that my school districts...
Baker.
So, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Got to get used to the process again. But I just know that this is a major lift that we don't all get to bake in. These are real dollars that are now, frankly, hurting our negotiations with our school districts. This is real dollars that they're looking at. So these are things we have to take into account. I appreciate acknowledging my efforts to revisit and re-talk about the amazing lift ahead of the state with paid family medical leave. And I think that the cost that we set aside, $688 million, to open up this program, to get it started, and the process of committing ourselves to the 0.7% payroll tax that we said it was going to cost, 0.7% for our employees that are going to be paying this payroll tax along with our employers, we have to stick to that. We should really work hard to do that. And I think we've got to have more conversations about this year. I'm looking forward to working with Representative Frazier on the enhancement bill, if you want to call it that, or the tweaking bill. We've got work to do, and I've shared with you a bill and some ideas, and I really want to sit down and work with you on what we really need to do to make this bill that has passed. But we've got to make it work for small businesses. And these folks are, they're in the grocery aisles facing shelves and ringing out customers, and they're in the shop putting motors together. They don't have time to be thinking about how do I have to manage this program and this process, and it's going to be painful. And we have to accept a one size does not fit all. So this is where the work really begins this one year. This year, Commissioner, in the implementation phase is going to be the hardest ever, because we actually have to put it on the road now. The rubber has to hit the road, and if it doesn't work, it's going to be a colossal disaster, and it's going to be another major hit on our brand in Minnesota that they didn't figure this thing out when they launched it. So we will talk a lot about that. I know this session, Mr. Chairman, and others, I just hope that we have an open mind to the real cost of these things. Let's get the money out as fast as we can. There's folks that want to get busy and working, and yet we found a reason to give them some money, but I hope that we find a more efficient way to do this, because we're not even halfway with getting some of the dollars out that was spent. I'm even saying let's take some back and maybe put it to areas. I know we mentioned the mental health side of things. That's a huge issue. Mm-hmm. You're right on. But what I'm concerned about is different agencies do their little pieces of it, and we don't have the money in the, and I'll call it the mother agency of DHS, to do the enough things for mental health support, because they weren't given enough reimbursements and they weren't doing other things. So we're chopping up this important part of our communities, and we're trying to give a little piece to everybody, and then nothing gets done. That's my fear. So we as leaders have to talk about this openly, respectfully, and we got to find a solution to these kind of things. So we've got a busy year ahead of us. It's a short season, but we're ready to help out, be engaged to find the best ways to do this. So appreciate your time. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
I'll represent Senator Muir.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Zhang. Thank you, Commissioner and staff, for being here. And thank you, Lead Baker, for those comments. I just wanted to speak briefly to the UI, because as someone who's both on the Workforce Committee and Education Finance, so I do think that the slide, there is a slide that I think talks about the number that you were looking for, which is that $38 million has been accessed in our first summer for employees to be able to use the benefit. As I understand it, in Education Finance, we created a bucket of funds. I think it was about $150 million. So I think roughly a little bit less than a third was accessed in the first year. So it did not come out of, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand it, did not come out of school district budgets. So we paid for that. I think that there is a sense that there will probably be two more summers that will be covered by that bucket of funds. And then we will need to, like, you know, figure out. But I think, you know, just to make it clear for the first year, that it did not affect school district budget. So I think if you're hearing that, and I have heard that from school district, it's more like fear of what's coming and how we pay for this ongoing. But it should not have affected their budgets this year at all.
Director Dana.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. And Representative, you are entirely correct, I'm making up a word, but you are entirely correct on that, is that there's a pool of funding that's held by the Department of Education that is reimbursing schools for those expenses over the summer for folks access unemployment insurance. We certainly can send the report about those resources around to this committee, and that is something you can anticipate is going to have further discussion in the Education Committee, as the representative highlighted. But just wanted to note here that that is correct.
Lead Baker.
And just to follow up, I'm not arguing that the money wasn't put aside, but what happens at a negotiating table is long, long term. So the problem is we gave them one-time money, and one, 2, 3 years, then it's gone. They're already thinking about the next 10, 15 years, though. You're right. We don't know what's going to happen in the next 2, 3 years, and are we going to have to fund it again? That all depends on what we have left in the kitty. There is nothing left in the kitty right now. So what we have to honestly say is, if you want to say you paid for it this year or next year, they always look at long term, because everything multiplies down the road. If we want to give a teacher a raise, it isn't for one time. It's ongoing. So let's get the economics right. Let's make sure we talk about long term stuff, because long term, that's what school districts are planning on. Yes, I agree. We did give them some money for this up front. We gave them a lot of money up front for the free breakfast program. It's not always there, though. It's more than we thought. So it's going to run out, and then we got to figure out then what. So that's what I kind of meant by that. So I appreciate the clarity, though. Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Commissioners, for being here today with us on this important topic of workforce. So I had a couple questions, Chair, if I could just ask a couple short questions. My first one is what you talked about, the percentage of Minnesotans that have the four-year degree. Are we tracking anything for the tech degrees? With trades?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we don't have that in the presentation, as you noted, but I believe we do track that, and our team could try to find it for you.
Thank you. That's my first question.
And if I could also just add on that, probably important to note as well how important it is that we offer and encourage young people to pursue a range of possibilities. If a four-year degree is right for them, great. And if a technical degree is right for them, that's great too, or an apprenticeship, or a range of possibilities. And I think we've probably gotten better about that over time, at acknowledging that there are a range of great paths that young people can follow. And that's partly too, I think, where some of our youth programs come into play, and also great things the chambers and economic development groups do, like the Bridges Workforce Academy, where you are busing in like thousands of young people to Central Lakes College, and you have employers set up, and you have the two-year degree program set up to expose young people to the range of cool options that there are in this highly structurally diverse economy that we have in Minnesota, so they can make a good choice.
Thank you, Commissioner. The next question that I have, Chair and Commissioner, is regarding the disability slide that you did. And I guess my question is, are there any partnerships with DEED? Because my concern is the transportation barrier with medically equipped transportation for people with disabilities to actively seek employment, and the non-emergency transportation barriers that exist in greater Minnesota for people with disabilities. And so my question to you is, what pathways are you considering that address non-emergency transportation in greater Minnesota for people with disabilities?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, maybe I would take a crack at that and then invite my colleagues if they'd like to chime in. You're absolutely right that, I mean, transportation is an issue in a lot of places, and in greater Minnesota, where I live, and others as well, the distances can be even greater. I don't know if our Getting to Work grants would touch on that. I'm getting head shaking, so I guess that's a no. One thing I would say about our vocational rehabilitation services is that I'm understanding that we have changed the delivery model over time so that folks no longer need to come to us where we are, but rather we go to them to a greater extent for that very reason that you mentioned. And I think that just reflects a customer-centered approach. We're trying to meet people where they are, so to speak, and we extend that as well to the way we're designing new programs. We don't want to just kind of put something together in an ivory tower and not have it be relevant to the people that we're actually working for. So that's why we're doing a lot of outreach to hear what are the particular needs we need to address.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. My final question is on the appropriations side of it. The 97 grants and the grants that have been issued, what percentage of those grants are for Greater Minnesota?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't know. We could figure that out. Of course, those direct appropriations are ones that where we're taking direction from the legislature and whichever entities you have told us to fund. In the competitive grants, when we are the ones that select the winners based on criteria established by the law, you know, in those cases, to the extent that we can influence where they go, we certainly do look for some geographic balance, among other considerations.
Deputy Commissioner, did you want to speak to?
Thank you, Chair Zong, Representative. I was just going to say that's absolutely right. We do take in consideration, try to look at balance between the Twin Cities and Greater Minnesota when we do the distribution for our competitive grants. And then, I would agree with you on that. That's absolutely right. And then for our direct, just kind of going back to the direct appropriations, we certainly can provide that information. Again, that's not something that's within the control of DEED to decide where those funding goes. But I could say that, as I mentioned earlier, that we actually roll those out as the first thing that we do in terms of making sure those direct appropriations get out the door. So a majority of those, if not, I would say over 90% of those contracts have been executed and are in play.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. If it would be possible, I would really like to see the data for the grants, for the ones that are appropriated and the ones that DEED independently determines where the grants are going for this biennium where we're at for grants in 2023 and then appropriations for 2024. The percentage for Greater Minnesota as opposed to the whole for both of those categories, please.
Chair is on. Representative, we definitely
thank
can do
you.
That.
Chair McAfee.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. And I would just always careful. I learned on the Outdoor Heritage Council, if you could make sure you give us what your definition you're using for rural Minnesota versus metro, you know, depending whether you use 7 county, 11 county, mm-hmm. just Hennepin and Ramsey, it means a lot different. So if you can just make sure that when you share that information, you're clear about that. Thanks.
Any further? Oh, Representative Weems.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner, and your team. And I just want to add Happy Ash Wednesday for those that celebrate that holiday. Great report. Things look so good. And it's and as you said initially, what is your vision? And your vision is to continue with the priorities that have been set out ahead. And I encourage you to continue to visit, and seeing that you took a tour and you're eliciting those responses from the community is, I think, key. I saw Boom Chicka Pop on there. My kids dig that stuff. and I just think always about if we're continuing to do the same thing and we're looking for the same results, maybe there's something else out there. I hear from my small business community the concern, the workforce concern, as well as the environment changing and their consideration whether to move or do something differently. And I would ask you to take a look again, because I think last year we were talking about the unfilled positions that are in our business community was somewhere around 200,000. We put a lot of money into grants to prepare people to go into work. From the businesses that I've visited with, they're more than desirous to do the on-the-job training piece. And so if there is a big idea, a Kaizen event, it is just doing that little dating marriage service between those existing businesses that are willing to pick some of the freight of training those folks up that can marry up. So I would say keep on doing the great work of looking for things to do. But I think on that piece, my only question is, do we know what that number is of unfilled business positions and the effort for that to be one of your key efforts here in this next year?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, first of all, thank you for the encouraging words. And we are, in my family, Boom Chicka Pop fans also. When it comes to the unfilled positions, I mean, I think one measure of that is the vacancy rate. And that is, if you're not familiar with it, it's basically if you look at an org chart and all the positions that an organization would like to have, how many of them are not filled right now. I don't know in raw numbers off the top of my head, but I do know that when it comes to the drive for five sectors, we have a target that we are aiming for. I believe it's 4.4%. And so certainly we're above that now. But that 4.4%, if I'm remembering the number correctly, reflects what has been a somewhat longer-term normal level, you know, kind of like preceding this very tight labor market that we're in now. Now, you don't want to ever steer too hard in one direction because you could address the vacancy rate by, you know, slamming the brakes on the economy. And that's not the way you want to get there. You want to get there by bringing lots of people into the workforce and helping them to identify those very desirable career opportunities. So we're trying to strike that balance. And I should add as well that when I say I don't have a new Matt Verilek special initiative, that's because we are focused on implementing well. And the way we're implementing reflects innovation and change over time. I mentioned, for example, how our team have changed the delivery model of vocational rehabilitation services. And I think that's smart to do when it comes to paid leave. Again, we are doing lots of community engagement so that we're getting insight from all the future users on how can we make this thing minimally burdensome and maximally effective and not just, again, design something that won't actually work well. You know, there was such a robust debate, of course, in the last session about whether to proceed on paid leave. And now that debate is behind us. Now we are in the implementation phase. And I've said to every audience, whatever your view was on whether to go that direction, it's now in your interest and my interest and everybody else's interest for this to work well. So I'm, you know, reopening the door for folks to give us their input on implementation so that we can do things in innovative ways to the extent that we're allowed by the law and make it as effective as we can.
If I may, Mr. Chair, Representative.
Representative Weiss.
And I really appreciate that, the point around thinking differently about how can we get more people into the workforce. And I think one step you've seen during this process, this last legislative process, was actually Drive for Five, where we did look at those industries where you did see high vacancy rates. For those that don't know, what we emphasized in that was actually work-based learning. So it was very much emphasis on work experience, on-the-job training, internships, and so that we can help to get more folks to kind of try out, if you will, for lack of a better word, with the employers. In addition, what we've done is actually there's an investment in what we call DEI, and that could be very broad, which is to help employers with understanding that there is a changing demographic in the state and that some of the populations that they have not been able to work with in the past or have not worked with in the past, to help give them opportunity to build plans on doing outreach, recruitment, and retention of those populations. So to help on both sides. And then just the last part in our targeted populations grant, what we also put there for some of our grantees is that we put an incentive. So if you're placing folks at a rate of about $25 or higher, we're going to give you an incentive to do that. So we're trying to incentivize our partners to make sure that they're developing the best quality individuals for our businesses and placing them. But we're also trying to make an investment in our employers so that they're ready to take on a new and diverse population that they may not have worked with in the past. And we're definitely open. We have to be nimble as in this time of, you know, trying to help employers meet the moment. And so anytime, if anyone wants to have conversations about ideas, we're always open to that, to how we can do more training, outreach, and our relationship building with our employers.
Representative Weems.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, and your team. And I think I'm hopeful about the future in the sense of Minnesotans have a great work ethic, and our job creators and our entrepreneurs also want to employ trained, well-educated folks that are prepared and are open to maybe, you know, picking up some of the training piece for the new Minnesotans that are here. And so I just want to make certain that we're marrying those two things up, which I think is an easy thing, but of course some of the most the easiest steps are a little more complicated, maybe not wicked complex, but I think there are some very easy steps to do that. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner.
Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner Dariel, for this presentation. One of the things that, while I'm listening to this conversation, one of the things that comes to mind is the new data I was reading about you know, different job categories and who does different jobs. And the Black community in Minnesota have the lowest, you know, ratings when it comes to technology. That's the job that many, you know, people are not doing. And I know there are a lot of, I talk about this all the time, there are a lot of people who are underemployed. Yes, we have jobs open, but the reason, one of the reasons why we have jobs open is a lot of people retired. We didn't give, you know, the new people skills to fill these jobs, so there's that gap. So how do we fill the gap? Well, we try to provide trainings and skills for the population that we have. Many of them are new immigrants. Many of them are from the BIPOC community, you know, low-income communities. We provide them the trainings and skills that they need. And one of the most frustrating thing about government is we really think that everybody thinks like we do, and we think that, you know, putting stuff online is accessible to everybody. I remember I was here when COVID hit, and everything shut down, and everyone was, you know, supposedly to use computer to do things. And I have, you know, Lake Streets in my district, and I have, you know, one of the smallest, you know, small businesses on Lake Street. Many of them are immigrants. Many of them don't speak English, don't own a computer, don't have access to a computer, and we expect them to, you know, log into a computer, you know, upload documents, apply for what they need to apply, and that was the really difficult time. We had to rethink everything. So what I really want to encourage you guys is let's not forget what we have learned from COVID, that not everybody has technology, you know, friendly skills. Not everybody has access to technology. And whatever initiative, great initiative we have, it shouldn't be online. There has to be a way that it's accessible to the community. We go to the community. We have to be intentional. If we really want to do, you know, close this gap of, like, we have people. It's not like Minnesota doesn't have people. We have people here, and we actually grew population, which is a wonderful thing. But some of the reasons why these jobs are vacant is because the people that are supposed to fill them don't have the skills to fill them. So I really want to encourage you and your team, Commissioner. I know you're new at DEED, but you're not new at community work because of your background and, you know, the work that you have done. We really need to think and rethink about the way that communities access these things, because while I know that there's a lot of great programs, I'm still hearing a lot from community that the accessibility is still a problem. So I'm just going to, you know, leave you with the words of accessibility, accessibility, accessibility. That should be the key thing. How do we make sure that people can access this great resources that DEED has? And please expand your horizons on who you work with, because I know it's easy to work with the people that you have worked with in the past. It's like, okay, who do we know in this, you know, field? It's so-and-so. But the usual suspects normally are not the ones that know the community, that work with the community effectively. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, Deputy Commissioner, did you want to share some thoughts initially?
Sure.
Chairman
Hassan. Chairwoman Hassan, thank you for that. I think, you know, access to resources, programs, tools so that folks can be successful is paramount for workforce development, and I say the whole agency. you know, I think you're absolutely right. You know, we need to, and I think we are, we're rethinking our service delivery models, essentially. You know, it's everywhere. You mentioned Lake Street, where your business is. We do have a career force location there. We've had a lot of conversations about the possibility of expanding hours to weekends and evenings. To that point that you made, that not everyone has access to computers, so we want to make those, and we do have computers there, as well as individuals to assist folks with kind of walking through the process, and then having staff that are language appropriate to assist the individuals that are coming in, because we have a diverse group of folks that are coming into our systems. And so we are trying to adapt our services to work with the folks that are coming through the doors who need assistance. And so that is actually is occurring. But and I think what you saw with the targeted populations grant is to start looking at those organizations that may be different from the ones that normally get grant funding. So making investments into those smaller not-for-profit organizations that may be deeper rooted into the community than some of our larger organizations, so that they have the funding to do that outreach and to and they have create better bonding with some of the folks in the community. So we're really those are a couple of ways which we're trying to address that. But you know, one size does not fit all for every community, as you know. Always looking for different ideas on how we can augment our services. One thing you did see during the COVID or COVID days, or high COVID days, I should say, was we started delivering services in our libraries. And then we also started looking at our other partners who can deliver services. So we're going to continue on those, taking those actions to get deeper rooted into the community so that we can make our programs more accessible, but also opportunities for upskilling. And so folks can move into family sustainable wage careers.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you all for your presentation today. I have one follow-up question on the data request from Representative Zalesnikov. That I think it would be good to have a retrospective look of what have we done in prior years, and recognizing the disruption of COVID, we probably don't want to go back into the middle of that, but a comparison point on what were we doing with investment in across the state in different parts of the state over time? Thank you.
Deputy Commissioner.
Chair Zong, Representative, yes, we can do that.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair Zong and Commissioners. My follow-up question is to the Chair's question and some of the representatives that have asked the question in regards to communication for people looking for a job or access for small businesses with unemployment, the barriers that exist. Are there opportunities to have a helpline that is not just a daytime hours Monday through Friday with remote workers that could be accessible to people by phone? Because I think that many people have access to their cell phones to be able to have a helpline for job seekers and also for employers to ask questions if they have barriers with access to computers or technology, other pieces to at least get the connecting point. Knowing that we have language barriers, knowing that we have tech barriers. So I'm wondering if you've thought through any opportunities for remote access helplines to direct people in the most efficient way. Thank you.
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'd say, you know, we have what we call career force locations. I'm not sure if you're familiar with those. But their primary goals are, through federal government funding, is to serve both job seekers and employers, essentially. And they are located across the state. And they're ran by our 16 local workforce development boards. Primarily, we look to our partners to do that outreach with a lot of the businesses in that area. We also have teams at DEED who are called workforce strategist consultants to do work with businesses throughout the state as well to provide information to employers about the services that we provide. But getting to what I think is the root of your question is, are there different ways to do that outreach, particularly for smaller businesses or folks who are doing remote work? I think that's something definitely we could look at and try to identify ways and how we can make sure, I mean, I think, I mean, this is no secret. Some of our services are kind of the secrets of the state, and so we're always striving to do a better job of doing that outreach. We have a director of outreach services at DEED who goes around and talks not only to job seekers but also to businesses to offer those services. But identifying the different tools, we talked about Minnesota Works a little bit earlier, is supposed to be available to employers to actually post their job openings and to do that match with workers. So as that kind of gets further developed, I think and I hope that we can see an increase in matching and starting to close those gaps and those opportunities. But we can look at different avenues, and that's a great one for us to consider. So thank you.
Representative Zalesnikar.
No further questions. Thank you.
Vice Chair Brian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Boom Chicka Pop was mentioned a couple of times. I always feel like I'm obligated to say a little bit about that organization. So, you know, as an MSU alum in Mankato, I remember going to many sports games and seeing Dan and Angie popping kettle corn in a copper basin with a, like, looked like a paddle. They were that's how they started the business. It was basically a garage operation, and now look at how big the operation is. In fact, I invite anybody to come down to North Mankato for free smells, because when the wind is blowing just right, oh, what a wonderful smell in the afternoon when you're thinking about snacks. Yes, and go the other way too. Yes, but you know, I just wanted to also thank Deed for you know, assisting us in disseminating the money that we spent to create other small business opportunities to grow. $405,000 for Mankato State University to help small businesses in our area. And I think that I look at Angie and Dan and how successful they were, and I look at the Small Business Development Center that we have in Mankato churning out small businesses and helping them develop and grow. So I just want to say thank you for that.
The commissioner and I went to school in Northfield, so we know a thing or two about smells.
Mr. Chairman,
Commissioner,
if I could add for the record, that's malt meal.
That's right.
That you're referring to, yeah.
Any further questions? That being said, thank you, Commissioner, and your team for being here today. Appreciate the presentation. I'm looking forward to being a partner with you all to make sure that we can address some of the issues in our state. That said, next week we'll be hearing some more presentations, one from Dr. Corey about workforce in the BIPOC community, and from some folks who have received fundings working with Minnesotans. And then the week after that, I believe we will not have a hearing on the 28th. Because of the speaker, I was just made aware this morning that he won't be having a hearing due to other things going on. And then we will resume in March and start hearing bills. So if members, if you have bills in the community you want it to be heard, please do let me know so we can start scheduling those in March. That's it. Committee is adjourned.